Thank you to A Yarn Story for sponsoring this episode of Pomcast. A Yarn Story is a beautiful wool boutique in the historic city of Bath, specialising in independent hand-dyed yarns. From the 1st to the 21st of April, A Yarn Story will be hosting a trunk show of all the samples from Pom Pom Issue 12. You can try on all your favourite designs while browsing for the perfect yarn.
Hello! And welcome to Pomcast, the podcast brought to you by Pom Pom Quarterly. I'm Lydia Gluck, and I'm here, as I always am, with Sophie Scott. Hi, Sophie.
Hi, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you doing?
Good. So we'll start this podcast. Maybe people haven't listened to the podcast before.
Maybe.
What kind of podcast would you say this is?
A good one.
A good one. Well, that's...
A knitting one?
A knitting one, yeah. We might be a bit biased, but I'm really excited to say we actually have a review on iTunes.
Way.
Hey, so thank you to Hippie Nikki, as your name is on in the internet.
Maybe your alias.
Maybe, yeah, your alias. But yeah, we had a really nice review from her saying, this podcast reminds me of my friends. It's just like hanging out with people you know. It's funny and they always have great guests on. That's kind of an edited version. And it makes me feel a bit like self-conscious saying like, oh, well, these people are great and it's me. But that's really sweet, and thank you very much.
Yeah, we appreciate it. Thank you.
And yeah, if you like us, tell iTunes. If you don't, let us know, and we'll change something. I don't
know. We'll do our best. Yeah. We'll be whoever you want us to be.
But yes, so welcome to the podcast. We've got our usual kind of setup of tell and tell. We tell each other and you guys about our knits. We've got news and reviews. Exciting interview with Clara Parks, the yarn whisperer. She whispered some yarn right down the microphone for us and to you. Also, we've got our Ravelry Realness, where we browse through Ravelry for our favourite knits under a topic. And we've also got a new feature, Travelling Stitches.
Mm-hmm.
And then finish off, we've got top three.
Top three, always.
All right, so let's start off with tell and tell. What have you been up to? What have you been knitting?
Well, I finished my tambourine cardigan, nice. Which I'm very, very pleased with. So I made it in the Uncommon Threads, I think it's, yeah, Merino DK, mm-hmm. in the colour Confetti, as I said last podcast, which is sort of light grey with little confetti splats in pink, purple,
and nice.
Not pink, pink and purple, pink, blue and yellow.
I always think it's like the iridescent kind of edge of a bubble.
Yes.
You know, it's kind of the mainly kind of like this translucent-y blue, and then you do have these little shimmers in it.
Yes.
Very
yes.
nice.
It's beautiful, and I was really pleased because I managed to finish the cardigan in time for Edinburgh Yarn Festival.
Hey.
More on that later.
Yeah.
But yeah, so the cardigan is done, and I hadn't seamed anything in a while. I mean, it was just the set-in sleeves, so that was fun.
Good. Well, I know seaming for a lot of people it seems like a problem.
I can't say it's my favourite way to do things, but I do like to have different cardigans which are different shapes and sit differently, and sometimes, you know, seams are just the way to get a cardigan.
It seems to be.
Seems to be the best way to, you know, to make a cardigan not have raglan, for example. I mean, there's lots of different ways of doing shaping, but yeah.
I'm wondering how long I can keep going with this pun. I mean, it's...
Seamy.
It seems to be a rich seam, which I'm mining.
Very good, very good. Yeah, so that seems to be finished as a cardigan. And so I wore it and that went well. It was warm and I liked it and other people seemed to like it also.
Cool. So yeah, that's the cover girl from the latest Pom Pom magazine.
It is from Pom Pom Spring. Nice. And so having finished that, I'm working on my Fairchild jumper by Bristol Ivy, which is from the winter issue.
Nice.
In some yarn I got from Unravel. Mm-hmm. Which we went to in February, as discussed on previous podcasts. And I got some John Arbin yarn, the Viola in English Mustard.
Nice. A classic mustard. You do love the mustard yellow, so.
Do I? Oh, yeah. I'd just live in it if I could. So I'm making that jumper.
In a vat of mustard.
Just live in some... spicy.
No, we both were like, that's funny. And then like, no.
No bad
Too far with this crazy imagery.
That's been going... going well because of my excess knitting time on the trains to and from Edinburgh.
Yes, as it is known to the locals.
How about you?
I've been working on Susu, which is
Susu,
which is a jumper by Nora Gorn.
Mm-hmm.
It's part of my New Year's Knit Illusions, which we talked about on, I think it was podcast 8 in January. I was going to knit at least 4 jumper/cardigans, and this fits in the category of spring/wintery thing,
mm-hmm.
because it's quite a cropped, it's an interesting shape in the fact that it's quite loose, it's very like positive ease.
Yeah.
So a lot of people kind of look at it and it's quite tenty, but it's all part of the elegant shape of it,
mm-hmm.
that it's all quite loose and swingy, and you have quite fitted arms mm-hmm. on the design, so I think that balances out. If you have a, you know, if you have your cropped tight nature somewhere, you've got to have the loose flowing bit within a yeah. design to get the balance,
yeah.
and this does it really well. You know, because Nora, she knows her.
Oh, she knows.
She knows her cable. She knows the shapes. yeah, really cool cables at the front, and it's like the main body's double moss stitch. It's like a panel of lace at the front, and it's got quite an interesting kind of curved front, so it's not like flat, straight. So that kind of adds to the whole texture and detail, and I'm really loving it. And after I've got past this like first cable repeat, I think I just like establish this kind of, it's like rib within the cable.
Nice.
And I was sort of being like super nervous knitter, like every stitch, like I check the pattern and then like knit one stitch, like, oh wait, what am I doing now? And it, oh, okay. And now I've kind of got over that first hurdle, it's like flowing beautifully and I'm like, yes, it's great. Oh. And I kind of into the magic of the knitting now, rather than having to like really cautiously check a chart for every little thing. That's good. It's going well.
And what yarn is it?
So I'm using Eden Cottage, Bolan DK in Hyssop, which is really interesting, like kind of a little yellowy, but kind of jadey and a little bit bluey green. Really gorgeous. And I think because it's blue face luster, you kind of get the yellow luster of that yarn naturally coming mm-hmm. through. And yeah, Eden Cottage, Victoria, who does it, she sort of, yeah, has these quite subtle kind of knitchery inspired colours.
Very good. I also started to knit a Delita shawl, which is from the autumn issue. And the original,
loving those pom-pom patterns at the moment.
Well, I've got a lot to catch up on because I like all the patterns in pom-pom. I just have only two hands.
Yes.
So it's in the original, it's in like this beautiful single ply from Lioness Arts in this like amazing yellow, mustardy yellow.
So that's the one that's kind of got that contrast edge of like almost like little jeweled.
Yes. And it's so, I love that. And it's got like a double layered lace knit on edging, which mm-hmm. is really beautiful. So I've been wanting to make it forever, and I'm actually making it in quite a different yarn. I'm mm-hmm. holding two yarns double, two Shibui yarns. I know, say what? Double trouble, as it is known to everyone.
Are you going to call your pattern on Ravelry that now?
Definitely.
Okay.
Definitely. So it's the Shibui Seema, which is a merino and alpaca lace weight held double with Shibui again,
mm-hmm.
Silk Cloud. And they're in ever so slightly different shades. One mm-hmm. is kind of a grey and the other one's kind of like a brown grey.
Ooh, so and slightly mild, kind of tweedy
slightly
effect.
Slightly mild, yeah. So it's going to be quite different to the original, mm-hmm. Which is kind of exciting. It's mm-hmm. going to be like a lot fluffier. And it's probably the wrong time of year to be knitting it, really. But, you know, let's be honest, we live in the UK.
There'll always be a point.
There'll always be a time when I need something to make me less chilly.
Oh, that sounds enormous fun. And remember, you guys can always keep us up to date and tell us about your knits and show and tell. We just get to do tell and tell really on this podcast, but you can do show and tell on the Ravelry forum groups for the Pom Pom magazine.
Yeah.
There's a spring knit along now.
Yep.
Cal.
As it's known.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, come and show us what stuff you're making from Pom Pom, and you can be in with the chance of winning prizes also.
What do knits mean? Prizes! All right, so news. Top exciting news is that Lydia and Pom Pom went to the Edinburgh Yarn Festival.
Sure did.
Tell me all about it, because I wasn't there.
No, but you were in Paris.
Yeah, I was.
Which is a different story.
It's a different story. I was there in spirit.
Yes, you were. You were, in so many ways. Lots of you lovely listeners recognised my voice, which was a super fun experience, and it was really nice to meet you all. Unfortunately, Sophie's voice wasn't there to be recognised.
I was there in spirit. When I say that, the spirit is Instagram, so I was like, looking at, oh, look at that. I'd like to buy that.
Yeah, it was just loads of fun. Like, even the train journey was fun. As I say, I got to do lots of knitting and beautiful scenery between London and Edinburgh, especially kind of through the kind of Newcastle area. Mm-hmm. There was lots of beautiful countryside. Could even see the sea at some points.
Oh, wow.
So that was very lovely. And the show itself was obviously, you know, there were so many great people there, and there were lots of dyers and, you know, various kind of teachers and general cool knit folk who I hadn't seen for a long time, or whose yarn I hadn't seen for a long time. And there was, of course, Clara Parks, who is our interviewee. And what else? I got myself a really lovely little kind of tulle pouch made out of old Harris tweed
mm-hmm.
by Woolen Flower.
Yes.
So that was pretty fab.
What kind of vibe do you get at a festival like that? Because it's quite busy and big.
It was very busy, yeah. So especially on the Saturday, it was very, very busy. But the overall vibe was just really, really lovely. Everybody was really smiley, all the vendors, all the people visiting, even the organisers managed to be very present and very smiley the whole time, which was really a feat unknown to anyone, I think. And there was just a real kind of buzz about the whole occasion, I think. It was really nice to do a show outside of the south of England.
Yeah.
You know, because obviously there are knitters all over the world
Indeed.
And even, you know, all over the UK. And it was nice to get out of our kind of little corner mm-hmm. of the UK. And so the vibe was sort of one of camaraderie. We're in it together. And there was lots of, just lots of really nice people being nice to each other, for want of a better way of explaining it.
Any standout memories from the trip?
Well, meeting Clara Parks was, of course, a big pro. Stephen West and Isolde had a super cool stand with shawls all over it, which was pretty fun. And they do a great thing, or Isolde does a great thing, where she puts like brown paper up and pins her shawls to it and then kind of draws on that brown paper, which I enjoyed very much at Unwind and I enjoyed very much this time as well. What else was fun? I accidentally bought Rachel Coopy's hair in yarn form.
So Rachel Coopy, yeah, we interviewed maybe the second or third podcast?
Yeah, pretty early on.
When we said like, oh, your hair's like a beautiful lavender, and she's like, blue rinse or something. Like, yeah, it's not that exotic. But yeah, she just has this wonderful like pony, My Little Pony coloured pale lavender hair.
And when we last saw her though, she had several colours in it, didn't she? She had like a bit of light blue and a bit of pink.
So
I quite literally did buy her hair in yarn form. So that was good.
That's a yarn name waiting to happen, Rachel Coopy's hair.
That's true, it is. I was saying that somebody should do colours based on Adventure Time characters.
Yes.
Just saying. Hashtag.
Okay. Well, no, Stephen West definitely has his shawls like lumpy space.
Yeah, well, it was him. We were talking about it and I was like, somebody needs to do a Adventure Time themed yarn stuff.
Let's, if you guys haven't watched there. Adventure Time yet, it's basically the cartoons of a little boy and his dog, and it's just kind of slightly surreal and bizarre, but great. Anyway,
that was a little segue. Yeah. And the cabaret on the Saturday evening was good with Knit Sonic and Co. That was a lovely event. We had to make a sheep out of various sort of sheep-esque items, such as wool and pipe cleaners. And we made a sheep which had little olives as little sheep droppings next to it. So we had black olives on the table, and that went down quite well, I think. Just because they were like those sort of ones that come out of a jar that don't have stones.
So it was just
little black olives.
You're like, edible, and like, leave the stone. That's far too conceptual. It's getting
So that was it. And there was, of course, the Parallel festival that was held via Instagram through the lovely Anna Maltz and Knittingtastic. Anna Maltz, also known as Sweater Spotter, of course.
Knittingtastic, also known as Rachel Atkinson.
Exactly.
So, yeah, we definitely mentioned that. So a lot of people who couldn't make it to Edinburgh Yarn Festival, obviously you might have just relived the experience through Lydia's words right now, but they created the hashtag Bedinburgh Yarn Festival.
Yep.
So stay at home, get in bed with your knitting, and join in with the biggest international cyberspace-based festival in the world. The first ever, maybe. I don't know.
And there was a quite racy picture of Anna Maltz in bed.
Yeah, that kind of kicked it off with her, like, half naked in bed with her knitting, just surreptitiously placed in the correct place.
Yeah.
A little bit of bedhead. Yeah, very saucy for first thing in the morning, you know.
But yeah, so that was really nice. You know, there were people who wanted to come so much that they just joined in with the festival spirit from their own homes.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That was great. And I was, you know, I felt very lucky to be able to be there amongst all the people
mm-hmm.
And even got to see a little bit of Edinburgh.
There you go. But were you jealous that you couldn't join in with Edinburgh Yarn Festival?
A little bit.
Yeah, well. All right, so let's move on to reviews.
Uh-huh.
So what have we got to review today? We have...
Yes, reviews are the natural bedfellows of news, as we know. So what do we have?
We have some beautiful yarn sent to us by Yarn Story,
mm-hmm.
a lovely knitting shop in Bath, so check them out. I realised when we were doing this segment that we'd then have the opposing pronunciations of Bath without the whole place where you can... Let's get out of that way, that's funny. So yes, we've got the Shibui Knits Pebble. This is an interesting blend. It's 48% recycled silk, 36 fine merino and 16% cashmere.
Ooh.
Oh, that's a big
luxurious
mix. Luxurious, yes. So when you were first received this yarn, what did you think?
I thought that yarn looks really, really nice. It looks really like sort of fluffy and squishy, but kind of crispy a little bit maybe.
Okay.
And versatile.
I have to admit, like, when we were sort of, like, looking which one should we do for this one, I was like, oh, let's do this. The mix sounds really interesting. And I have to admit that when I got it, I was a little underwhelmed.
Well, because the ply is quite unusual, right? The blend could be completely blended, right?
Yeah.
But instead it's, I'm assuming the merino and cashmere are together, and then the silk seems to be plied separately. Does that sound about right?
Yeah.
I could be wrong, but there's definitely, like, it's like quite tweedy because the two plies are different colours.
Definitely. I would definitely describe it as tweedy. But yes. I think my initial thoughts on it was it looked a little stringy and I was a little put off by that. But guys, don't be put off. And it also kind of looks quite delicate because it's a lace.
Yeah.
And it kind of, yeah, looks a bit kind of flimsy and stringy. And I was like, oh man, I want this yarn to be so much. But so we did a little bit of knitting up. And yeah, I think it's definitely one of those knit yarns you have to kind of knit to kind of
really appreciate
yeah, because it's sort of the stringiness is sort of more of like a tensile strength. It's much stronger than you think it is.
Yeah. And I guess it blooms, doesn't it, when you work with it, the kind of lovely fluffy merino-y cashmere-y aspects of it come into their own.
And it has a lot of projects we'll talk about later as well that have used this as a doubled. So it's kind of a lace work yarn, but you can sort of double it up for those four-ply projects.
Yes, and Shibui have a knack of making lots of yarns that can be used and combined in various ways, like in the way that I'm using for my Delita shawl, as I was saying earlier. There's a lot of, they do a lot of different bases in quite similar or complementary colours, don't they? So that you can do a lot of playing around doubling it to make it thicker.
And especially this, the colour we have is poppy, which is like a very vibrant, like, well, poppy orange.
Yeah.
And they have the tonal kind of colours sort of twisted in that. So you get quite an even tweed, so it's very consistent, the spin.
Yeah.
So that's nice if you don't want anything too flecky.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a nice kind of consistency to that.
Yeah.
So another thing we always like to gauge gauging the yarn is the awesomeness of the colour names. So
very
I've
important.
Got some colour names here of the Shibui. And I was just wondering what you thought these names would colour would be.
Okay, so I have to guess what shade they'll be based on the name.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
They're not as abstract as maybe some yarn brands are, but have a go. So, graffiti, what kind of colour is that?
Is it blue or purple, maybe?
It's purple. Yeah, it's like a purpley, dark purple colour.
Nice.
Yeah, interesting. Did you know this?
I feel like I've come across graffiti in Shibui.
I thought this was going to be a really good segment where you didn't know. And
okay, well, what about the other colours?
People can play along at home. All right, what about spore?
Okay, that I definitely don't know. Spore. Okay, what would I imagine a spore to look like? Oh, green of some kind?
Yeah, it's like a mossy green.
Cool.
What is another good one?
Abyss.
Black.
Yeah. Into the abyss. And it's not going to be like a bright pink abyss, is it, really?
No. So yeah, most of the yarn names, well, yeah, you got most of them.
Do they get good marks for yarn name accuracy?
They get top marks for yarn name accuracy.
Good.
I think you just illustrated how.
But I think creativity, pretty good. I mean, there aren't many. You don't come across many yarns that have a name like Spore.
Yeah.
Or Abyss.
Oh, what's Sidewalk? Actually, what you probably know.
Oh crikey. I mean, grey.
It's actually kind of more of a cream than this picture. I mean. Unless Ravelry's lying to me.
No, it never lies.
Accuracy, they get top marks. For off the wall creativity, maybe less so, but we'll let them off because the wall's very good.
Because the yarn is very, very nice. Yeah, so there's all sorts of things you can use this for as well because it has the properties of being very lovely single or being used double.
Yeah. I think one of the things to say, it's not very springy, which is what you often find with more wool-based blends. So maybe this is like a good transition-y yarn if you haven't tried knitting with anything of a mix. I think that'd be interesting.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, it kind of is a bit more flat. So maybe for more kind of summery, shapey things that you don't want to have, like, you don't need the negative ease or anything like that.
Yeah. And it's worth pointing out that Bristol Ivy actually chose this yarn for her Desert Island yarn.
Yeah.
Or as one of her, I think we let her have two, didn't we?
Yeah, because of the time zones.
So she chose it as one, and then there's no real higher praise than having somebody like Bristol Ivy choose it as their desert island yarn.
So what would you knit with this yarn?
Well, Julie Hoover has two awesome patterns that are made in Pebble, one of which is called Heart, which is a kind of long, open cardigan,
mm-hmm.
like a good cardigan.
Yeah.
And I can imagine this being, yeah, like you say, quite a good transition yarn because it would be like nice, lovely and warm, but the silk gives it that kind of lightness.
Mm-hmm.
Cole, spelled C-O-H-L-E, which is a polar neck.
Yeah.
Which would be really lovely. And I think also that it would work really well for the shawl pattern that we had in our spring issue called Blomande,
mm-hmm.
which is a kind of triangular shawl that's got lovely lace kind of on one end of the triangle.
It's that kind of like greeny jade colour, isn't it?
Yeah. Yes, yeah. So the original was in Anzula Haiku, which is actually, I think, wool and bamboo.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's quite, this is thinner, so yeah. you'd have to kind of make sure you're getting gauge and stuff.
Yeah.
But you'd get a kind of, or you could double it.
Yeah.
But I think it'd be quite nice to try it in lace, and you'd get just, yeah, that more kind of open work
mm-hmm.
would come through. And actually the halo of the yarn might kind of fill the gaps a little bit anyway.
Yeah.
Awesome. So yeah, that's one to try, and that's of course from Yarn Story, who are sponsoring this podcast. So thank you, Yarn Story, for sending us this skein to review, and yeah, we fully recommend giving it a go. Very well known and well respected and wonderful Clara Parks, who is the creator of The Knitter's Review, which is, you know, everyone's kind of go-to place to find fun reviews about knitting related things, mostly yarn, but includes many other things, who is also the writer of several wonderful books such as The Knitter's Book of Wool and The Yarn Whisperer.
The Yarn Whisperer.
So
she's
here she is.
Echo.
I learned to knit when I was 13 years old. It was a very snowy Christmas in Maine, and my beloved grandma taught me.
Do a lot of people in your family knit? Is it kind of a knitting family, or?
No, not at all. My grandma was the only expert knitter, seamstress, kind of all-around maker. And then my mother is a musician, and she just completely rejected knitting. She tried and failed, and now that I've gotten into it, she keeps saying, well, maybe I should give it a try again. But she's very, she needs to be on the move a lot. I'll say, because okay. In case she's listening. And so it would probably not be a good idea for her to do knitting. Everybody has their specialty, right?
Exactly. Yes.
What was the first thing you made?
The first thing I made was a scarf, is I guess technically what you could call it. It was kind of a rectangle. I think I started with 20 stitches, and then it became 22, and then 26, and then back down to like 14. But it taught me exactly what I needed to know. It was just garter stitch, knitting every single row, and I was so hooked on the movement, just the motion again and again and again, that I couldn't stop.
Yeah,
I think there's something very lovely about the muscle memory that you develop as well. And so did you kind of knit steadily then up until you started The Knitter's Review, or was it a kind of on and off thing?
It was on and off. I grew up, my high school years, after I learned to knit, I lived in a very, very hot climate in southern Arizona. And I can't convert the temperatures, so I'll just say really hot. And I didn't even own a proper pair of wool socks until after college.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I was living in France and my feet were cold and I was wondering why. Like, well, because you're wearing these little cotton socks. So I kind of picked up knitting on and off. In college, it was a coping mechanism. Even though I'm process, not product knitter, so the whole time in college I was working on the same blue sweater.
Mm-hmm.
Very proud to report that it has been seamed. It's not completely done yet, though. The neck still needs to be finished. And then you come and go with it, but then I was working in California, Northern California, in high-tech publishing,
mm-hmm.
and kind of going further and further away from where I felt that my soul was.
Mm-hmm.
And I remembered knitting and how it made me feel, and I just fell head over heels back into it. And that kind of prompted the inspiration to move to Maine, which is a slower place. It's quieter and gentler, and it's a really good wool culture. And once I moved to Maine, kind of the logic of Knitter's Review fell in place. And here we are, 15 years later.
Yeah, so obviously the Knitters Review is kind of a really important touchstone for everybody who works in the industry. You know, it's you have a real knack for finding things that are really lovely and interesting and kind of bring them to people's attention, and everybody kind of trusts your judgment when it comes to knitting stuff. So could you tell us a little bit more about how you started the Knitters Review?
Well, thank you. That's very sweet. I'm honored. I try. How I started it was... I was longing to do something with my love of knitting, but I'm not a skilled designer. There are so many more just geniuses out there.
Yeah.
And I, for me, it's really always been about the yarn. And what drew me to knitting in the first place was the basket of yarn that my grandma had by her chair by the fireplace. Mm-hmm. Like, I want to know how to make that go. And so a friend was working on something sort of similar for quilters, and he mentioned, well, it's going to be product reviews. And it suddenly clicked that, oh my God, there could be a place for writing about yarn. And there was no industry for it, no market for it whatsoever, no outlet at all. But I just felt like I'm really passionate about this. And it was at a time when people were starting to buy yarn online, and there were no descriptions of anything except, you know, this luscious, wonderfully soft, beautiful, beautiful, buy now. And then you get this box in the mail and you'd open it up and like, this is not at all what I was expecting. And why isn't it the way I was expecting it? Why does it feel this way? And I was expecting a halo, but it's not really a halo. It's more, anyway, so I got passionate about trying to answer those questions and learn as much as I could about yarn and tell its story, because there's so much of a story in yarn, and I'm excited to see, especially at this event, that everybody is, they're really, really getting more in tune with that, and there's so many more stories out there, so it's lovely and very exciting.
Speaking of stories, you obviously have been working on yarn, as we know, and Amy, who I work with, won your yarn last night at the raffle. And she is so, so happy about it. And we've all had a look, and it's very, very beautiful. So if you could tell us a bit more about the kind of story behind the creation of your own yarn, that would be lovely.
Well, Clara Yarn, it was an offshoot of, I don't know, a kind of a lingering feeling that I'd had over the years, maybe by year 12. I was afraid of being that restaurant critic who doesn't know how to boil an egg. You know what I mean? But they're so pompous about everybody else's boiled eggs. So there was partly that I wanted to understand and appreciate and value more about the true challenges that go into making a good skein of yarn. Because I know what I like and I know what I want and I look for, but I don't know the challenges that people face in trying to create that exact product. And I didn't feel like it was really fair to critique other products if I couldn't fully appreciate what went into bringing it to market. And then it was also a factor of wanting to work with and support and raise awareness of people I've met along my own journey, who, the people in this industry, they work so hard. And they're such interesting people. And people who work with wool, the mill workers and the fiber merchants, they're so passionate. And they're just, if you start to ask them questions, they will just spill. Nobody asks them questions. Nobody wants to know. And they're eager to have their story told. So, and I realized there wasn't really a way that I could do that within Knitters Review. So I started with my Great White Bale project, where I bought a 676-pound bale of scoured Saxon Superfine Merino, and we followed it around the country making different yarns out of it. And I realized when that was finished that I wanted to continue, and I wanted to broaden it and try other things and make it more accessible to people. But it's really about shining a light on as many people and places as I can to help raise awareness and like lift the waters for everybody in the industry. So Clara Yarn exists, and it's just kind of my adventure. And when I find things and I work to create, like with the right person and finding the right mill and really creating something I feel very, very proud of, then bringing it to people, it's kind of a pop-up shop, and then when it's gone, it's gone, and we go back into our bunker and plan for the next wool assault. So that's where it is, and it will continue to go as long as the story is out there and it needs to be told.
Hopefully I'll have the pleasure of having some of it one day, but for the time being,
I'm happy to be in the presence of Amy Skein quite frequently. So the next question is one that we ask everyone, and I think it's probably, you probably just kind of answered it already by accident, but I don't know if you're aware of Desert Island Discs, which is a kind of BBC, it's a show that's been around for a very long time where people have to choose certain songs to listen to on a desert island. But what we've done is Desert Island Yarn. So the question is, if you could just take one yarn with you to a desert island, you can have it in all the colours, but you're just allowed the one yarn, what would it be?
Oh, you're really cruel.
I can't take two. I can't smuggle one down my shirt.
Well, I'll give you two, if that helps.
Oh, thank you so much. Oh, because, well, one, it would be, like, for the deep spiritual sadness, it would have to be, and I don't know what, if it's even still out or if your listeners know about it, Handmaiden Swiss Mountain Cashmere Silk. And it's spun at a water-powered spinning mill in the Swiss Alps. I mean, it's just, you know, angels sing. The fibers are perfectly, perfectly blended. And it just, you touch it with your fingers and it's like a prayer. It just, it feels exquisite. And that's, I actually have a little swatch of it in my bag. I call it my comfort swatch, or my, in case of turbulence, if I'm on an airplane and I get, you can pull out the swatch and just touch it. But that's not fair, because that's a very languid and silky and kind of luxurious and sort of a pouty, you know, the beautiful girl kind of a yarn. But then the spunky redhead next door, who's always there for you, like the whole grain bread. I don't even know. I would have to say something like Jameson's, if I could bring every color. I've bulked the system. Bulked the system? I don't know. I've tweaked the system. That it would have to be something like that. That, yeah. Just, it lives on your fingers, it lives on the needles, and it just bakes into a wonderful cohesive fabric and keeps you warm. Something like that for every day. That would have to be, yes, my desert island.
Well, that's good. You've got like all your bases covered. And with the Jamesons, what have they got, like 90 colours or something? So, but that's fine. You are allowed all the colours. So when we ship you off to your desert island, you'll be there with all your yarn. Actually, when they do desert island discs, they always ask people, so how do you feel like you'll fare on your island, you know, with your things that you're allowed to take with you, and you seem like quite a kind of meditative person in many ways. How do you think you would fare on your island with just your knitting?
Oh, I think I would fare very well. I spend most of my time in a town of 900, okay. And there's spotty internet access, and part of the time I'm a mile down a dirt road with no electricity and no cell signal, no nothing. So I think I would do very well, especially if I had a good book, mm-hmm. and if I had paper and a pen and an extra bottle of ink and copious amounts of tea. I don't think there would be much of a problem.
Well, that's good to know.
Can we go there? Can we go there, please?
I know, right? One day. And the other question that we ask everyone is, what's your spirit animal and why?
Oh my God, my spirit animal. Oh, my spirit animal, geez. This is a completely wrong thing to say, and it's too mainstream and stereotypical, but the first thing that came to mind was Grumpy Cat. Or just one of those dogs with the really sad, smooshy, smooshy face, and it breathes like that, you know, that just, because nothing can ever be tragic when you're around an animal like that.
Okay, great, so we'll take that. So based on all your kind of experience at the moment within, you know, making your own yarn and, you know, being so involved in the kind of yarn and knitting community, what would be your kind of tips for people when they're looking for yarns or when they're wanting to buy yarns?
I would say coming to an event like this where you can look people in the eye and start them in conversation. Okay. I mean, there was a man in one of these booths and I started talking with him, and he held up a skein and he told me the exact farm where the wool came from and where it had been spun. Like, and I had no idea. I thought it was just kind of a touristy shop with patterns for shawls. But like, no. He knows the complete lineage. Mm-hmm. And without that ingredient, you might discount certain yarns. And I guess I would also say, knowing what other people are doing and what other people are knitting with is, that's always an interesting barometer. But don't let that be your only kind of weather vane for picking your yarns, because everybody, your fingers are unique, and if you let your fingers be your guide and your intuition, and that goes if you're buying things like cashmere especially, where sometimes it's cashmere, sometimes maybe some other things have been added to it, letting your own instinct and intuition that you've developed over years of working with yarn and touching it really trust that voice, and it won't lead you wrong. And consider everything that you buy, you're investing in wool futures. So it's a good investment.
So I'll be using those tips. So you're just in Edinburgh for really a few days. And is this your first time in Scotland?
This is my first time in Scotland, and it is so beautiful. It's so beautiful. I met with Isolde my first morning, and I just kept stopping her to take pictures, and she kept saying, "Oh, Clara, you're not even in the pretty part of town yet." It's beautiful, and the people are lovely, and the color and the landscape and the way the light hits the buildings, it's wonderfully moody. I can see where you could get some really grim mystery novels out of it, and that the people are just lovely, lovely.
Yeah, I'm having a similar experience. This is my first time in Edinburgh, and I've seen most of it at night, you know, having been at the show, but even at night time it's really quite something. And so it sounds like you're a tea drinker anyway, so how's the tea here?
Oh my God, it's so, I did, right away from, even, and you guys are probably going to laugh at me, but even in the hotels, in the U.S. you go to a hotel and they have these crappy old coffee makers where any water that comes out tastes like coffee and it's lukewarm, and they might have a bag of chamomile and a bag of Earl Grey that's been there since like 1984. But here, I mean, and I know it's not unique, but still, let me gush. There's a kettle, and there's tea in little cups, and there's milk, not artificial milk or half and half, but like actual milk from a cow. And just even in restaurants, the flavor of a pot of English breakfast, it's floral and delicious. I've been having a lot of fun.
Could you just tell us kind of what a typical day for Clara Parks is like?
A typical day for Clara Parks, if we're talking in the, there are two ways to it, and this is going to sound a lot more posh than it actually is, but I spend part of my weeks, in the wintertime, I'm down in Portland, Maine, a giant city of about 35,000 people. The peripheral area has more, but it's a lovely coastal town, huge wool culture. I live in this triangle, Mary Jane Mucklestone, Pam Allen lives right down the street, like within two blocks of me. Bristol Ivy lives across, like I could throw skeins. We've done skein exchanges in the street at night. Like, is that you? Psst, yeah, here. So when I'm there, I would get up very early and have tea and maybe toast and a grapefruit. And then I say goodbye to my beloved for the day. And I will take a long walk down to my coffee place, because if I don't have a destination, I'm not really interested in walking. I'm not one of those, la-di-da, I'm going to go stroll in the country now, unless there's sugar and caffeine at the end of. So I walked through the downtown, and it's just that wonderful daily ritual of seeing all the same people and the same crazy guy. And I love these people. And then I go and I have I have coffee, a cappuccino, in the place where everybody knows me, and they, you know, hey, how you doing today? And I work there for several hours until my laptop battery dies, which is sort of the, like, time to go home. And then I'll walk back up the hill, and I'll stop somewhere for lunch or go home and have my lunch. And then the afternoon is usually reading and swatching time, just to be with yarn and not look at a computer at all. And then my partner and I are both big cooks, and so depending on who had the harder day, I'll just start making something. It's just fun, it's pleasant, and dinner, and then, you know, it being Maine, usually it's like by 8:30, like, well, I guess I better run the tub. It's time for bed. And that's a typical day in the wintertime. In the summertime, you would just substitute country and a porch looking out over acres of blueberry fields and a pond in the distance, and if friends are around who have a boat, they might come and ask me to go sailing in the afternoon. So that replaces the knitting and reading. And then if it's a rainy day, there has to be cake. There has to be cake. That's kind of my spiritual, you know, when you feel pressure in life, you just like got to put the computer away, put the paper away, and soften some butter and start making a cake. And everything straightens itself out. Does. By the time the cake is done and you've taken it out of the oven, whatever has troubled you has had time to just rest.
And do you ever knit on the boat when you go boating in the afternoons?
No, well, the boat that I love to go on, I have some friends, Don and Robert, and Don taught me how to sail, and he's in his late 80s, and he's just a lovely, lovely man. But the rule on sailboats is kind of you follow the captain, no matter what. You do not question. And this is interesting because I went sailing with Stephanie Pearl McPhee and her husband, and it was fascinating to watch her grapple with that rule. I think she would agree. But no, it was very good. He gets grumpy even if you take out a camera to take pictures. He's very zen, like be here, be in the moment. You're watching the sails, you're watching the wind, you're constantly looking for gusts, and you're you know, switching the sails to get the optimal movement of the boat. Mm-hmm. And so within that context, knitting would be not appropriate. However, if I were out on a schooner for a couple days, just saying, maybe that would be lovely, actually.
And more appropriate. So, yeah, there aren't that many places where it's inappropriate to knit anymore, I guess.
Thank goodness.
If people want to kind of find you online, where should they go?
Oh, boy, where can you get... Let's see. I'm kind of everywhere. I'm loving Instagram right now. I'm Clara Parks on Instagram. I'm Clara Parks on Twitter. I'm Clara Parks on Facebook. AlwaysKnittersReview.com. That's my home. And then the Clara Yarn is on... It's at ClaraYarn.com. And that's kind of whenever it pops up, but I usually leave hints in other places. And I'd love to find you any of those places.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much. Been a pleasure to have you. So, goodbye.
Goodbye. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it. She
was brilliant, and yeah, so thanks to her again for taking the time to chat to us at such a busy festival.
I know, because I caught up with everyone on Instagram. You know, that was my version of it. Instabra, yeah. And I was like, everyone seemed everywhere, and more so her. So yeah, you managed to grab her for an interview. That's great.
I did, yes. Thanks again, Clara.
Wonderful. Okay, so on to Ravelry Realness.
The realest place there is for Ravelry.
On the Rav, we have... springtime knits.
Mm-hmm.
So we are moving to slightly warmer weather. We do talk about the weather a lot on this podcast.
We're British,
so knitting and weather. I did tell someone about a podcast I did, and they were like, what is it? And I was like, a knitting podcast. And they were like, there's knitting podcast? And their mind blew into a different hairdo. They were just so amazed. And I said, yes. And I talk about knitting. My co-host. Anyway, so this week we're talking about springtime knits.
Yes, we are.
Lydia, what would you choose for the spring to knit?
Well, I would choose the water lily, which is from spring, unsurprisingly, spring 2014, pom-pom, the Megan Fernandez. Well, I feel like we talk about this thing a lot.
Well,
I've made one, for example.
It gets a lot of love on Ravelry. It's a classic T-shaped tea.
Yes.
I put all the words in the same there to explain that. And at the top, it has this great little lace pattern. So mm-hmm. It is a very versatile and lovely.
It's lovely, and it's great because it takes, you know, just two skeins of yarn, and there's so many beautiful water lilies all over Ravelry, so I'll have to try and find a few of those for the blog post.
You can put them in together for like some sort of Monet impressionist.
Yeah. So I'd say that that's a strong contender for a spring knit. How about
Definitely.
You?
Well, I found this shawl, which mainly I fell in love with because the name is so great. It's called Mr. Pinkerson by Casa Pinker. And it's a very open lace, like not lacy, but kind of very open knit shawl. And it has a great kind of chromatic gradient mm-hmm. change. Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons I thought you'd love it was the yarn that's used is called Lydia Sock Gradient. Your time
that's
has come.
That's my favourite.
They named a yarn after you, finally.
All this time I've been waiting and waiting.
So yeah, that's a really nice kind of light summery shawl. Mm-hmm. And I like the colour changes because I think spring can be that time where you're like, if you put like, well, I don't know about you, but I kind of like, yes, dark clothes, dark big coat, I will sleep in this. And then when spring comes, you're like, I remember what colour looked like. I remembered pastels. Open to that, like a big blooming flower. So
yes, this is good. What else you got?
April Shower Mittens by Kat Lewinsky. Now, these are a free pattern, which, of course, makes it all the more delightful. They are little mitten patterns, because even though we're saying about spring, you know, you're going to need those days.
It's, like, warmer in that it's not really, really cold.
Yeah.
For Britain.
For Britain. and the great thing is they have a little umbrella, like a little brolly design on the back of the mitts, and then you use beads.
You can stand under my umbrella.
Exactly.
Little beads, sorry.
Well, it got really awkward there because I don't really like that song. It's like, hey, yeah.
Oh. I like it.
All right, and I know a lot of the world does.
Anyway, the beads. Back to the beads.
Anyway, back to the beads. Back to our neutral territory. yeah, so you have your little brolly to catch your rain, mm-hmm. and then there's little beads within the mitt, which are your little sparkly drops of rain.
Oh.
So that's really, really cute.
It's pretty special.
Yeah.
I like it. I also am a big fan of the Bunty Mitts by Ella Austin, which are fingerless gloves, colour work with little kind of flower motif on them.
Right, so when I think of Bunty, I think of that, like, 70s magazine.
Don't we all?
Yeah, so, and I think the design is quite 70s.
It is quite 70s, yeah. And the colours are very 70s, aren't they? Yeah. Like, it's a... I didn't even make that connection.
Well...
Sophie has smart brain.
I'm so old. I've travelled through many centuries to be here. I remember the 70s well. What kind of person I am that references the 70s casually? Oh yeah, well, remember that magazine. Another lovely one, so Bristol Ivy, she's getting a lot of airtime.
She is.
We just have these dips of themes of people come in and out. We do. And then also because knitting is a community where everyone ends up knowing each other, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
She has a lovely top in Quince & Co. Sparrow, their linen yarn, which is called Emmeline, and it's like a classic T-shirt shape, which I think is a good versatile knit shape.
Yeah.
So it's kind of mainly it's kind of stocking stitch with then like a little garter stitch kind of detail within that, like every other row there'll be like the reverse.
Nice.
And at the bottom it's at the very bottom of the t-shirt's that lace detail. And I think that maybe would be a little bit too summery for now, but hey, if you start now guys, this is my top tip.
Yeah.
Be ready for when it's too hot.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I also am plotting to make Mysa, which is from the new spring issue, Pom Pom 2015, and it's in two different fibre company yarns.
Yeah.
Meadow and Savannah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And
amazing textures.
Yeah, so you kind of get the contrast between the two, and it's got really interesting construction. It's by Kate Gagnon-Osborne. And, yeah, that's a really good kind of springy transition knit. And that's all our Ravelry realness.
Because Ravelry is what?
Fundamental. Newer segment, which we have now dubbed Travelling Stitches, which is all about stories of travelling with your knits, would you say?
Yes, I think that's exactly travelling with your stitches almost.
Almost as if your stitches are travelling with you.
Not only within the knitting of travelling from one place to another, I hope I haven't lost you here with this concept, but then also, yeah. Anyway, guys, you know what it is.
You know what we're saying. So we started off with a few tales of our own last podcast, and we have had some excellent responses on our Ravelry group, to which you can always send us exciting ideas and anecdotes. We always love to hear from you guys, but we have some very good travelling stitches contributions, such as...
Sally Ravels. I really like her little picture. She had a picture as well. So, like, top marks for tell and show.
Uh-huh.
Show and tell, as it's even known.
Mm-hmm.
So she was knitting at a kid's birthday party, and there was nowhere to sit down. So she made herself, like, a little knitting pouchy tool with her water bottle. So she had a yarn in there. Water bottle holder, even, sorry. And then she was knitting. You can see the picture. That's going to paint a thousand words to you guys. So she was using that to hold her yarn, and then she was knitting away.
And the awesome Diana Waller pointed out that the purpose of tools like the gilly hook, which is a super fun
word. We need more words like that.
We need more words like gilly hook, it's true. It's a kind of little, very simple kind of little bit of metal, basically, that is a contraption which allows you to kind of hook your yarn to your clothes or belt so that your hands are free to just knit while you're hanging out. So thanks for that, Diana.
So we also had Knitosaurus Rex, who had a very similar only one sock encounter, which is what we talked about last podcast about a friend of ours being questioned by a commuter who was like, what are you knitting? Is it only the one? And she's like, no, I've already done the other one. He was like, oh, okay.
When she first taught herself to knit, she was knitting at the theatre and an older lady behind her leaned over and taught her how to knit without dropping the yarn.
That's lovely.
Which is very, very lovely.
That's a good reason to knit in public, to get some top tips.
Get tips, exactly. Yeah. And actually, when me and Amy were on the train to Edinburgh, we were knitting away and chatting, and a woman walked past and was like, oh, do you happen to have a darning needle? And we were like, yes. And so she borrowed a darning needle from us.
What? Was she darning something? Or what was she
No,
doing?
I think she was sort of doing some finishing of some kind.
Oh, okay. Oh, I'm saying, like, a train full of knitters on that trip. Yeah, I think there was a lot expected, of yeah.
mini, you know, Traininborough yarn
festival. Traininborough yarn festival, exactly.
And we also have Killed Craft, a picture of her knitting on the go, holding her knitting out. And it's very exciting and pink.
Yeah, very fuchsia pink. Mm-hmm. Knitting with walking, I think, is a thing I need to try. I don't think I'm brave enough.
I see somebody doing that on my way to work quite often. There's a particular lady who is always knitting socks as she's walking along.
That's pretty cool.
I think that is really cool. I think I would do it if I don't know. I used to try reading as I walked. It didn't go very well.
Mm. Yeah.
I suppose I don't have to look at my hands while I'm knitting, depending what it is. Maybe we should give it a go. We could do some tests and trials.
Next podcast is like, so I broke my nose.
I didn't see the lamppost.
But hey, that's cool. Props to you.
Yeah, props to you. And we've also got, I'm assuming this is an acronym and it's IWS.
Not IWS.
Or could be IWS. There's also a picture of this nice lady knitting on a boat.
In Whitby.
Oh, so nice. I think this story might be a well-known and well-sympathised with one where you drop your yarn, maybe on a bus or just some other public location, yeah. And the yarn rolls under your chair and about the legs of chairs and people, and you have to enlist the help of mostly people, not so much the chairs. The chairs can't really help you.
The chairs can't help you now.
It's too late. You have to enlist help in order to regain full control.
Mm. So that happened to her, but she looks like she's a very pro public knitter.
I'd say, you know, so.
Knitting on the go.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Knitting on a boat, I mean, that's great.
I'm on a boat.
Exactly.
So thanks everyone for sending us all your stories. And so lastly, onto the, well, this particular segment has lasted, hasn't it?
Yeah.
The top three. That's because you can make infinite lists.
Well, we keep going back to like, oh, let's make a top three about this type of food and this. Last podcast, we were doing places to knit. Mm-hmm. And then we were like, oh, and then you have snacks and blah, blah, blah.
It's a bit of a theme. Yeah, we keep... We can only think of food-related top threes most of the time. Like 95% of the things we think of to list and rank are foods. So we always want to hear your suggestions for possible top mm-hmm. threes. And of course, you can suggest food-related ones.
Yeah, of course, we're going
to
say no.
Super interested to hear any non-food-related top threes that you would be interested in knowing what our top threes are on.
And then we can, you know, debate the hot topics on Ravelry.
Yes, exactly. It's all about
participation.
Yeah, and hot topics.
Hot topic.
I'm like, is a hot topic a delicious snack?
Yeah. I was going to say, like, a melted, you know, you get topic bars, oh, yeah. Like the chocolate
no
bar.
No one likes those.
But no one likes topics.
Anyway, we're veering dangerously into our top three.
We better not talk about food too much.
Okay, so what our actual top three is for this podcast, which we bring to you on the cusp of spring, is our top three spring things.
So what are your top three, Lydia?
Okay, I have the following top three. At three, mm-hmm. I have Blossom.
Oh, yes.
Which I love, and at the moment in London, there is a lot of very beautiful Blossom. I like white blossoms, and I like pink blossoms. And
are there any other kinds?
I don't know.
How long is this list going to go on?
I like tree blossoms. Mm-hmm. They're mostly the kind, I guess, that you see. That is all. So at number two, I have... I don't know if this should even be number two. I feel like this should be... I put this at number two because I felt like if this was my favourite thing about spring, everybody would think I was an idiot and shallow and obsessed with snacks. So I'm going to stick with my running order, and it's mini eggs.
Cadbury's
mini eggs.
I knew you were going to say that.
Okay, so here's the thing, guys. I love mini eggs. I love them very much. I love that they are in fun pastel colours.
It's ode to mini eggs.
I love... that they have an exciting sugar shell, which is in pastel colours, and it comes with a sort of light dusting of icing sugar.
And magic.
And magic.
And crack, because it's so addictive. It's not, guys.
And there's Cadbury's milk chocolate inside, which mm-hmm. is delicious. And you can mostly get them between Christmas and Easter.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like you probably could get them the rest of the year, but they're not, like, widely available.
Prevalent, yeah. This literally, like, stands, like, a whole kind of... Not a whole aisle, if only that would be your dream.
I'd love it. And I have a habit of buying two bags at a time so that I can eat one bag to myself and share the other bag, because I don't like to share. I'm quite a sharey person, I would
generally
say.
Generally, yeah. I must say, I met you the other day, and I hadn't seen you in a while, and I was like, and I bought... Lydia a packet of eggs because I'm really nice, but I didn't even suggest that I could have a few. I was just like, these are yours.
Yeah. Actually, when me and Amy got the train to Edinburgh, she'd bought us a packet each.
Nice. There we go.
So we all know each other well enough.
We all know.
I even painted my nails to look like mini eggs at some point, and I'll try and find that picture for your viewing pleasure at some later point. And yeah, I basically love them. So let's move swiftly on to my favourite thing about spring, which is light.
Yes.
As it starts to get lighter. Both in the morning, you know, there's just more light, basically. So where, like, we're placed in the planet means that it gets darker, you know, our days are shorter during the winter and they're longer in the summer, and I just like waking up in the morning and it's light.
Sounds like you've been living under a rock for the winter.
Yes. I like to live under rocks during the winter, and I live on top of rocks in the summer.
Like a little lizard.
Yeah, exactly.
Someone did mention to me, like, what if you could hibernate, would you? And I was like, oh man, that would be amazing. I would love that.
Oh, yeah. So that's my top three. What's yours?
So, actually, three would be Blossom.
What? That's crazy.
But yeah, Cherry Blossom, I think, is the top there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, actually, when I was in Paris, one of the cool things, they actually had, like, Blossom tree in one of the shops. There was Blossom growing up and over the roof.
That's amazing.
Like, the ceiling of the shop, even. That's one thing I didn't expect. Paris has amazing flower shops.
Mm.
There you go. So number two, Easter bank holiday.
That's a good one, actually.
So yeah, having the time off, I think it's always a thing, like, I don't know, my family, it's always like, yes, family comes together for Easter, not mm-hmm. because we're particularly religious, but just because that bank holiday vibe.
Yeah.
Works family time. Spent family time, yeah. And within that, number one is Easter eggs.
Yeah.
I have to be specific on this. Because I don't know if they do this much anymore, but you always used to get a mug with your Easter eggs. Did you
yes.
have this?
Yes, and I had a really cool one with a bunny on it.
There we go. Yeah, so I used to have a really good Smarties one, which was kind of brown and, you know, like Smarties are inside, but then it had the little Smarties drawn on the outside. And I think one of the things with Easter egg free mugs is they're always a little bit rubbish, which is, I think, I kind of find that quite endearing. Because obviously yeah. it's a kind of free giveaway mug. I think that's the highlight for Easter.
It's true. I like it when you get the kind of the Easter egg that, yeah, has a fun... I like it when they have things inside, actually.
Oh,
that's
yes.
the ideal. I mean, it doesn't happen that much, really, does it? But that is pretty exciting.
I'm so jaded, by the way. I know. That much,
but I like smashing them as well.
Oh, smash. Wait. How do you smash the whole thing?
No, no, no. But, like, you have to smash a little bit of it to get to it, right? You can't just, like, grate your teeth against it.
Oh, no. Is that not how you do it?
You're just like... I don't know. No one can see me doing an impression of me trying to eat an Easter egg.
It's like I'm sat next
grating
to
it with my teeth.
Next to a squirrel now at the moment, just gnawing away.
Yeah, it's all about Easter eggs, and if possible, an Easter egg hunt.
Yeah, I feel bad for now putting my family first. So family first, actually, number one.
Family, then eggs.
Yeah. Well, no. We did a Easter egg hunt in my old flat where I lived, and one of my housemates did it, which was really cool. But then we didn't find all of them. So a couple of, like, months later, I was like, oh, Easter egg, like, tiny little foil wrapped. Obviously, it hadn't gotten weird or anything. But one of them was, like, behind the toilet. I was like, oh, that's unpleasant.
That's not a cool place. I remember me and some friends of mine, when I was very little, we decided that we would make... like, hide Easter eggs for our parents or something and put them just somewhere where they would never find them, basically. Like, in a tin in someone's room. Like, not something you would open.
Yeah.
And then just completely forgot about them and found them years later.
Oh, my word. Were they really gross?
No, they were fine because they're made of sugar, but I don't think we ate them. I think they weren't, like, mouldy or anything. They were just sort of inedible. They did that thing that chocolate does where it goes a bit sort of powdery.
Oh, yeah. Hmm.
Anyway.
Enjoy.
So eat your chocolates now.
Eat your chocolates now. Enjoy spring. And, yeah, I think we're kind of getting to the end of this month's podcast.
We are. So thanks for listening, and join in on Ravelry where you can on our groups, and send us any ideas you have or suggestions, anything you like, to podcast@pompommag.com.
So yeah, we definitely love to hear from you guys on Ravelry, and you'll see us on there as well. Thanks to Yarn Story for sponsoring, and to Clara Parks, and to you guys.
Yep, so we'll be back again next month.
All right, take care. Bye.
Bye.
Pomcast is produced by Lydia Gluck and Sophie Scott, with help from Eli Block, who created the original music for this show. For more Eli-related music, go to goodgirlandthebadtimes.com. Big thanks to Megan Fernandez, the co-founder and editor of Pom Pom, and to our interviewee, Clara Parks. Thanks again to A Yarn Story for sponsoring this podcast. And of course, we'd like to say a big thank you to all you Pom Pom buyers, subscribers, and listeners. Send any feedback or suggestions to podcast@pompommag.com. And don't forget to join our thread on the Pom Pom Ravelry group.